lineouts, racks.
Pulls, engage!
What an amazing try!
Tries and tackles, dissected by South Africa's top rugby minds.
That is world class!
This is To The Last Drop, your weekly in-depth rugby podcast with Liam Delcombe and Brendan Nell.
Brendan, we've got a week ahead of us that isn't necessarily laden with many matches, but will grab our attention. It's very much the one involving the Bulls against the Lions. And from what we saw a couple of weeks ago, there should only be one winner. And if we look at history, there should only be one winner. However, what we noticed or what we saw last weekend suggests that this could be quite a spicy one.
Yeah, I think derbies are anyway closer than we always. Doesn't matter where the teams are, they're always close games. And you say it should only be one winner, but I have to remind you, the last time the Lions went to Loftus, they could have won the game at the last minute kick. And the year before that, they did shock the Bulls and win at Loftus as well. So, this is definitely not an easy game for the Bulls. And I think last week showed the way they played the Stormers that when they do get it right, the Lions really can fire. Yeah. And it was great to see them in the type of form that we all wish they are in all the time.
Yeah, I think they will go up the N1 with a bit of a spring in their step after that game, because although it didn't rain during that game, the ball was wet. And when they needed to, they actually handled with a lot of composure when they had those off chances. And a couple of very good tries, I have to say, scoring the ball from deep. But I suppose the thing that stood out from that game in terms of their performance was their defense. I mean, they were outstanding. That is as good as I've seen the Lions defend for a very, very long time. But if you look at the number of 22 entries the Stormers made, the number of times they were properly in the red zone and they were repelled, I mean, I lost count. But it showed a real sense of urgency, a real purpose in that Lions defense. And if they can take that to Loftus, they'll have half a chance. But I will add this, though. The weather's been absolutely atrocious in Gauteng. And I think another wet field will probably count against them.
Yeah, I must admit, you were at Ellis Park, of course. I was at Loftus on Saturday. So I also caught glimpses of the game. But it seemed, especially in that second half, every time I looked up at the TV, it was just the Stormers attacking. And from what I saw, that was, I mean, we all know the Lions can attack, but the defense was a big thing. Just one caveat, though. I mean, they went into the last game against the Bulls at Ellis Park, coming off a very big win against the Dragons, I think it was, in the Challenge Cup, and didn't really help them that much. So it is an intriguing game in a lot of aspects.
To be fair, though, I mean, it's different opposition.
No, true. But yeah, I suppose that game's really sort of revived the Lions' hopes of a top eight place. They need to win a couple more. They can't really afford to lose where they are at the moment. But for the Stormers, it's going to be quite a difficult. Yeah, I know. There's all sorts of permutations and talk about how many games they need to win and all this to make the top eight. But if you look at their season, they've only won 5 of the 15 games they've played this season, and that's seriously not good enough. So John Dobson's really got a tough time on his hands, and they're coming. The next game is at Loftus as well.
Well, the Lions are not just 2 points or a point behind the Stormers, but 2 games in hand. So they could very well sneak past the Stormers as well. If they win this weekend, they will go past. And the Stormers being bottom of, if you look at the overall log, the lowest thanks to the African team. I mean, that will not sit well with a lot of people down south. And Dobson basically admitted after the game on Saturday that they would have to win just about every game from here on in to have a proper say deep into the competition. I think they'll still make the top eight. However, as you well know, if you cop an away quarterfinal, if you have to travel, especially across the equator, it's going to be very difficult to get an away win. So they're obviously quite aware of that. He did make the point, he did stress the point that winning at Loftus now is absolutely paramount. I think they probably looked at those two fixtures thinking, well, if we drop one, we're still in the hunt. But it's the one they probably figured they can afford to drop. Well, let's put it this way, another four to drop. But the thinking might have been that they'd have more success at Ellis Park.
I think it's going to, they're going to give it a full go at Loftus. And why not? If you look at the way the Bulls play, there's definitely a tendency coming in. And we had a couple of chats to players this week about it as well. And they, the Bulls have certainly identified it themselves, that they have this tendency of not being able to plant a knockout blow when they have teams against the ropes. It happened against Northampton. It's happened a couple of times this season. It happened against the Stormers, but they got away with it. And against the Sharks, when they had them against the ropes, they didn't plant the knockout blow. And if you're going to give a team like the Sharks as many chances as they gave them, they're going to take them. And the Sharks scored some wonderful attacking, counter-attacking tries, but all on the back of some really serious Bulls mistakes. And there's a bit of a debate going on in Pretoria at the moment about what's going on at, with Vlaar. Jake's obviously been experimenting with Vidi LaRue, and we all know how good he is on attack. But on Saturday against the Sharks, you sort of wondered if they wouldn't have done better with a Vlaar who had a bit more versatility in his play. When I say that, I don't mean Vidi's not versatile. He can sum up a game extremely well. But I just thought that you needed at times just to pin the opposition back. You needed at times just to send them back into the corner or just change things up a bit. And I just thought at times, there just wasn't that. I mean, that's amongst other things. They made a lot of handling errors. There was a lot of other mistakes that they made that certainly played a part as well. But it's definitely a debate. And you got to wonder, the one thing the Bulls are really missing is an all-round top international 10. And I know there aren't many of those walking around, but they certainly could use one.
Oh, how many tens do they have on their books? I mean, we obviously know about Johan Goossens' injury, but it's not like they don't have other tens.
No, they've got Butta Chamberlain and Jaco van der Walt, but it seems almost to be this crisis of confidence that they don't sort of give them extended time to play. And that's sort of the wonder. You wonder about those guys. Are they the right personnel for them? I mean, I was thinking, somebody asked me over the weekend, who do you think would be the perfect 10 for the Bulls? And I said, well, easy, Andre Pollard. Yeah, he was there. He's the type of player that takes the ball up. He varies his play, got a good boot on him. He's the perfect type of player for them, but they don't have that sort of player. I just wonder if they're going to be looking for, going forward for another 10 or somebody that they've got to back somebody at some point. And Vidi might be the answer short term, but I'm not sure he's the answer long term for them anyway, given his age and all the other things. But it certainly is a good, interesting talking point. But maybe we should, other than my opinion, let's bring in the opinion of somebody else as well. I'm first going to play a clip quickly of Jake White talking about some of the conundrums he had on Saturday about taking Vidi off and then maybe finishing with Butta Chamberlain and the whole sort of thought process behind it. And then straight after that, we'll go into Sebastian de Klerk, who this week has defended Vidi LaRue quite heavily and saying that people don't understand, they underestimate what he means to the Bulls team. So let's have a listen.
Well, I mean, that's exactly what I mean. But I'm going to go back to what I said to you. We don't want to be known as a team that can just maul and scrum. You've heard me many times say that the one thing the Bulls need to do is, that's always been given. You go through the olden days and you look at through the old videos, mauling and scrumming was always something they were very strong in. And I wanted to make sure that when we got here, we added more to our game. And that's probably why I'm frustrated today, because we didn't look like a team, even against 12 or 13 players, that had enough variation. And maybe we just got sucked into thinking that every call at scrum and lineout was going to get us a win. And that is, I mean, that's just, again, that's something we're going to have to, I'm going to have to sit them down and say, you're going to have to do more than just thinking every scrum and every lineup maul is points. Well, the reason I took him off, guys, because he was saying to the doc that his groin is very stiff. And I just thought, again, my call, I just thought we had enough forward dominance. I had a 10 that could go to 10. In hindsight, maybe I should have left him there and try to fight through this one. But how would I have known, then? So put Butta at 10. Butta is a 10. He's a goal kicker. The game was 10-7. Who knows? Maybe we win the game because he kicks a conversion and because he's on the field, then it's a masterstroke. But as it turned out, I just couldn't afford now to Vili to tell me at the end of the game he's groin sore and he's out for 2-3 weeks as well. We're not in that luxury yet where especially with the players that we don't have to our disposal now, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that is an area when... But he did. He played 30 minutes at fly off, and in those 30 minutes, we went from being the game to losing the game. So I suppose if you wear different hats, you can say you're sure that bringing him on as a fly off and not leaving the guy who's influential on changed the game. And I mean, there's just depends on whether you see the glass half full or the glass half empty. But he's a 10, and you know, I'll have to. It's very difficult for me now to give you, right, next week we're going to do this and we're going to bring this guy in. I mean, so many things happen injury wise. I didn't think Cameron wouldn't play this weekend. And literally post the game, that changes. So I'll sort of rethink about it tomorrow when the motion settles and the game gets relooked at, and then we'll pick a team that I think, you know, not that I think, that I hope will and will be sure will be able to win the next game against the Lions. No. And the reason I mention his grimness, he's probably kicked more this week at polls, thinking that he was going to be the goal kicker than he has ever before. So... I mean, who would have thought that if he's kicking and kicking and kicking for poles after what happened last week, then he said his groin started. And I don't think it's injured. It was just a risk. I didn't want to take a risk. And I genuinely thought that the forwards were going to be strong enough and a 10, that is a 10, would come on and we would be able to manage the game the way we did, and we didn't. So, you know, now we're going to have to find a way in which we, you know, which we regroup. That's basically it.
Nee, ek dink nog as is so nie. Obviously, Goose is 'n baie goeie speler, baie experience op 10, maar ek dink ons het baie diepte op 10 ook, Boeta, Jaco, klomp ons dat goed speel, maar nee, ek persoonlik het nog nie games van Willie op 10 gespeel nie, maar ek voel nog as hy's wel geskik vir daai posisie. Hy het 'n verskriklike goeie visie as het kom by die kicking game, hy verstaan momentum verskriklik goed, so ek dink, dalk, die laaste game het dan net swak gereflekteer, want ons het op baie ander plekke verloor. Soos ek gesê het, met die kicking game en goed en aan, is dit nou makkelijk om te gaan fout soek en te sê, ja, maar Willie speel buiten posisie, maar as jy kyk, as hy 15 is, hoeveel keer hy nie op 10 op nie? So in daai opsig, denk ek nie, hy voel rarig buiten plek nie. Ek denk is hy klein goed, soos met defense, wanneer hy moet recycle en wanneer nie. Maar dit is maar ongelukkige gewoontes wat lang vat om weg te leer, en dis nie ons eintlik dat hy baie foute regtig maak in die game nie. So nee, ek dink ons het baie confidence in Willie. Ek dink almal in ons squad weet hoe baie waarde hy heg vir ons squad, vir ons span. Net as hy op die veld is, jy dadeliker net 'n bietjie rustiger atmosfeer, want hy het 'n manier om die ouens kalm te kan hou en die regte goed op die regte tyd te kan sê. En ja, ek dink van my kant af wat hoe hy my al baie gehelp het is, en net hy weet hoe om die momentum te draai, wanneer het ons nou genoeg gespeel, wanneer is die tyd om achterin te sit, so ja. Kijk, ek dink, obviously, ja, soos ek kan nie genoeg stres, hoe belangrijk Willie vir die bille is nie, en dit is graag een punt wat ek sal hoef deurbring, want hy is iemand wat baie kritiek kry, maar, en definitief te min prys vir dit wat hy al in ons land gedoen het, en by die bille van dat hy aangekom het. Ek denk die spelers, as coach Jack bedoel, hy soos een coach, is nie dat hy jou fysisk coach nie, is net, hy identificeer spasie, en hy sal vir sê om goed te doen, wat hy het ervaring, hy het weet werk, en hy het een manier om die game, terwijl het gebeur, so goed op te som, dit is rarig goed, maar ek denk die communicatie van buiten af is daar, en ek denk die ouens geef om die nodige inlichting, ek denk, met die verwag een mens daarop, dat hy soos, al die kalmte moet bling, en ek denk, dis maar net een span ding, dat betek hier kort jy maar allemaal om in te stem, en om saam alles te kalmeer, en ja, soos jy sê, net goeie inlichting te gee, van buiten af binnen toe, wat ek denk wel gebeur, ons het goeie communicatie, ek wens ek kan jy veel beter antwoord, maar dit is my snaakse vraag, want ek weet, ons probeer om definitief help soveel soos wat ons kan. Ek meen, hy back homself ook, obviously, so, verstaan, betek hier, as hy iets train, het kom hy af, dan kom het hy af, maar elke liewe rugby speler doen dit, ek doen dit ook, en ek maak net so baie foute, maar ek denk, ja, oor Willie so goed is, ek denk, mense is net geneig om bykie meer na sy foute te kyk, as al die ander goed wat hy 100% reg doen, soos as jylle die naweekse game kyk, daar is 'n paar keer wat hy in die backfield verskriklike goeie werk te doen het, om spasie toe te maak. So ja, ek denk daar goed kyk, mens vinnig mis, en is daai klein detail wat hom regtig verskriklik goed maak, wat ek dink die kyker nie noodwendig altyd na kyk nie.
Interesting, some interesting thoughts there over there, and certainly Willie on attack is a great player. You just wonder if there's not something else missing. Look, the other thing I think with the Bulls at the moment, with the guy likes of Ranocchia, Ulrich Lowe, Marcel Coutinho, who was also out, they're certainly missing a bit of leadership in the team as well, and that can't be discounted. And with a Cameron Honecker out, I think people maybe underestimate the way he gets around the field and stops plays at sometimes, and just the lift he gives his teammates. And he's a youngster; he's still not a senior player. But he certainly makes an impact every time he plays. So him not being there as well, I think, also had an impact.
That's absolutely massive. I mean, if I was just thinking now, I mean, as you were mentioning those players, if you are going to hit a bit of a wobble in the season, you either do it early, as they've done now. They've clearly made a flying start. They've got a bit of a cushion, and they probably do have time to get some of those guys back before the business end of the competition. So It's not a dire situation. They can still rectify it. And of course, another win against the Lions this weekend, you know, some of those supposed ills or those pains will be soothed. So I think they're still in a decent position, but I think the fly-off issue is one that might come back to bite them, especially if you think of engagements on the road where you need a steady 10, somebody with composure. That is unlikely to waver from what they are supposed to do. But as I said, I mean, there may still be time to rectify the game.
Yeah, they've got a couple of home games now. They've got the Lions straight after that, the Stormers, then Leinster come down, and then Zebre. Now, Zebre has been the giant killers. I mean, they won last week in Edinburgh, which shocked us all. None of us called that one. Those are four games that generally, and when I say Leinster's, what, 17 points up on the Bulls and 12 or 10 points up on Glasgow at the top of the log. So you'd expect Leinster to probably send a second team down, yeah?
Yeah.
Given that the game is 1 week after the end of the Six Nations as well. So you'd expect that sort of to be their sort of thinking. So the Bulls will probably aim for a win in that one anyway. So they can pick up some good momentum there. But you're right, their next two games after that, I mean, they've got the EPCR Challenge Cup games, which one is overseas, two could be overseas if they will beat Bayonne. And then they go straight into an away doubleheader against Glasgow and Munster, which is going to be incredibly tough normally. But yeah, Limerick and the Scots team are not places you want to fly off to be jittery or to not attack with confidence. And they're certainly going to be cold winter's night game. So it should be quite interesting to see what they do there. But yeah, they might have to change by then. And Johan Huisson should be back by round then, I reckon. But whether they're going to throw him straight back into it waits to be seen.
Well, that's going to be one of the situations where they can't wait for him to be back. I mean, there's as many question marks as other people may have over Huisson. I think the Bulls would be very desperate to push him back into action. Now, we've heard from Sebastian Letarekamanu, who has now been called up to the Springbok lineman camp. There's certainly a couple of interesting names that have surfaced in that 50-plus group that will be assembled. What are the standout ones for you? Because you kind of look at some of the names, sort of more established names who haven't cracked a test match yet, and you kind of expect them to be back. But then there's a group of youngsters who you just sense they're just tugging at the leash to get a crack. And amongst them, obviously, there are a couple of Lions players.
Yeah, there are definitely a couple of Lions players. But as with all alignment camps, I wouldn't read too much into it. I think you probably could read more into who's not there than who's is there, because the net has been cast extremely wide. And if you think there's another group that's been announced today of another 20-odd players,
Big seven, yeah.
Online alignment camp, which is mainly the overseas players, and you take you up to about 80 players. So I think there might be space for one or two new players to come through. I don't think you must get your hopes up to see 12 or 14 new players this year.
No, certainly not.
Yeah, I think we've passed that. The box used 50 players last year. If you just stick to those 50 players, you've probably got a good good indication who's going to be there. There might, as I said, there might be two or three outside that, depending on injuries. But Rossi's been, over the 6 years, extremely consistent with the players he's picked. He's made bold calls at times, but I can't see too many outside in that group. So I think it's great to be there. There's certainly enough games, and we haven't sort of had an indication, but you can expect.
Well, the box. I suppose this is the point. There are a few test matches this year where if you wanted to try the untested, as it were, there are games against Georgia. The two against Italy, where he might be less, he'll be reluctant to do it then, but then there's also a game at the end of the year against Wales where you might want to chuck one or two in. But you're right. I mean, it's not as if there will be many fresh faces.
I mean, when we talk about this, I know it's everybody wants their favorite player in, and we all see great talent and we want to see them in Springbok jerseys shine. But I just go back to what Rossi did also say last year, and when he said that he's going to start settling this year on a squad that he wants to take through to the World Cup, and only 30 players can go. So I think the bigger question for me would be, which of those 2023 World Cup winners is going to fall by the wayside? Because if there's a
time, this is the year.
Yeah, this is the year you're gonna discard them. And he's been quite clear in the last two seasons that a player like Sasha Feinberg-Ngomazulu, for instance, needs to give 30 tests under his belt. Now that means this is the year he needs to play 10 tests if he's going to get to that point. And similar with other players. We've only come through Gerard Steenkamp. You could think of probably Johan Grobler, who's the third hooker, Jan-Hendrik Wessels, Cameron Honnekom, you know, those type of players, even Roofs. They're going to have a bit more of an extended run. And that sort of cuts down the chances for anybody outside that sort of, you know, group that was there last year. So I wouldn't rule it out, but I don't think people should get their hopes up too much that we're going to see so many new caps this year. I think we'll probably see the guys who came through last year getting a bit more of an extended run as well. But it's a tough year, Liam. I mean, if you think of it, it's certainly overshadowed by the British and Irish Lions Tour of Australia. That's going to be the main focus in the middle of the year. But and so those Georgia and Italy games are going to probably be a bit undervalued in a way. But they get long term, they're going to be immensely valuable for the box in 2027. But if you look at other than that, you go past that, the box have got two games against New Zealand in New Zealand, including one at Eden Park, which, as we all keep on getting reminded, the All Blacks haven't lost since 1994 and all this stuff. So that's a hell of a challenge for the box to put up a red flag like that in front of them. And then an end of the year tour, which was announced this year, the Autumn Internationals, as they call it up north, opening with a rather spicy game against the French. And and while they play Italy again after that, then a rather interesting game in Dublin against the world number two side. And then, as you say, the out-of-test window game against Wales, which so none of the overseas players will probably be likely to be available for that. So that will be very much a locally-based squad. So, it's going to be very interesting. A lot to look forward to, and a lot to – I think those – the three big the tests for me in New Zealand, the two tests, and then the France and the Ireland games, obviously the highlights of the year.
Well, I suppose the question then is if you were to offer the BOC management 80% win record, which is lower than last year, if they take it because of those four tests. I think back to the 2022 end of year tour where they played Ireland in Dublin. And bad opportunities to win that game. And in the end, I think there was some dodgy goal kicking as well in that game. They fell short 19-16. And then had to go to Marseille to play France in what was an absolutely brutal test match. It was played with great intensity. There were the two red cards as well to Dupont and Pierre-Steph Détourné. And, you know, while they lost two games on that tour, it was also, I suppose, very much a character builder towards World Cup the following year. So to go back to those two venues where they lost, well, when I say venues, countries, because that test was in Marseille, they'll go back to Dublin where they haven't won since 2012. They want to set the record straight there, I would imagine. And then against France, obviously, the hosts, the home support, I think, would be absolutely baying for blood. We'll probably have 23 guillotines outside the Stade de France if the French don't pull off a win.
Well, Certainly, there's one thing that won't really bother the Box is that we've seen that they've played through, you know, that sort of atmosphere before and won a World Cup, and it might be by 1 point. That's all, but that's all you need. I think the nice thing for me is that if you need to set up a challenge for players who've won two World Cups, winning in New Zealand, breaking a 30-year All Black record is definitely a great challenge for them. And then, as you say, they haven't won in Dublin. And I know there's a bit of, I wouldn't say bad blood in that, but there's definitely a couple.
There's an issue there. There's no doubt.
Yeah. They felt they shouldn't have probably lost that game in Durban, which is the last time the two met, and they lost that last-minute drop goal. But so they feel that there is a bit of an unfinished business there, and definitely the French one, maybe not so much from the Box side, but from France's side, there's been a lot said and a lot written. And after the game, there was a lot said as well, and you were there, Liam, so, I mean, you know how certain players made some disparaging remarks about referees afterwards, and we had Kobus Reinach getting death threats in the next week after that as well. And just the mood around that game was just terrible. And to me, it was a hell of a tough game. You're always going to get some dodgy calls in a rugby game either way. But I just felt it almost left a bit of a bad taste in your mouth the way they sort of reacted after that. And we're all passionate. We all want our teams to win. But that's going to make it certainly spicy. It's not the front.
I think it feeds into, if you're hosting a World Cup and you have an expectant nation, if you're ever going to have a palatable way of the host exiting that tournament. So, I can understand some of their frustration, but some of the things that happened afterwards obviously was lamentable. In it shouldn't have happened, but it does set things up quite nicely for November. When all is said and done, we've got two fantastic rugby teams that will square up against each other, and I expect it to be every bit as feisty as their last two clashes against each other in France.
Yeah, and while we're doing that, there's some other interesting clashes for that time of year. I mean, New Zealand are playing Ireland in Chicago again, which is an interesting one. That's the way they lost their first game against Ireland. So, that's certainly a bit of spice in that game. And down south, somebody's going to replace Joe Schmidt. It seems at the moment the latest talk is Michael Checa making a return at some point which would be very funny. I mean, we remember how feisty Michael Checa was at the time. But and I don't think you should go back to where you were before. Warren Gatland certainly proved that there's no guarantee of success. And then they have the Welsh job, which I thought Franco Smith was quite direct when he said in an interview that almost like Wales should come get it. So we'll probably try and get older Franco. We'll let the dust settle. We'll have to get him, because he said to us, and he was quite open when he was on the podcast as well, that he wants to coach international rugby, and he certainly misses it. And he's a very good coach. So there's certainly some interesting movements that are going to happen in the next couple of weeks, next couple of months, by the time we get to those internationals.
It will be interesting if Scotland were to lose a bit more steam, whether the debate around their coaching setup wouldn't be thrust in the limelight, whether Franco is not then part of the debate.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously a natural successor to Greg Townsend, because he's got the URC success. But interesting enough, you talk about the autumn internationals, and have you seen their fixture list? They're literally playing, I think, Fiji, USA. They've got a game against the All Blacks. That's the only big game. And then I think they play Tonga. So, talk about a soft fixture list. I mean, even Wales, who are probably at their lowest ebb, get the Springboks. Yeah, and but Scotland, one game against the All Blacks, and the other 3 weeks against smaller nations. Fair enough. I shouldn't be discounting the smaller nations, etc., but you just think the Scots would probably have a bit more ambition on who they play in the autumn. And I don't know if that's to protect the coaches.
Well, I suppose also the point of the exercise is to rack up some points that will count towards your ranking, towards World Cup, the World Cup draw. So they're probably one way of filling your boots and ticking
down. Yeah, I suppose Duan from the Mavericks will score another 10 tries and extend his record. But other than that, I don't see much value in it, to be very honest. But look, I mean, don't get me wrong. They must play the smaller nations wherever they can. But I just think three of your four autumn internationals against nations, smaller nations, and you miss out on the Southern Hemisphere big guns. It's quite interesting. It's an interesting strategy from Scotland. And I know a couple of the Scottish guys that I know aren't too happy about it. So it'd be interesting to see how they do. Of course, if they do lose against the All Blacks, it's going to be a very interesting autumn series.
Well, I mean, chances are.
Yeah, no, well, fair enough, chances are. Let's have a look at this weekend. While we're talking about this, we might as well have a look at this weekend. You know? We spoke about the Lions and the Bulls, and we spoke quite, put your money where your mouth is. Do you have a prediction for us?
I'm going to go Bulls, and it's partly home ground advantage, and also I think the weather will put the brakes on the Lions.
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be pretty much like the Ellis Park game. The Lions competitive for about 60, and I think then the Bulls bench probably will come on and change the game again. I still don't think the Bulls are going to be comfortable winners, but they will be. I think they will come up on top in the end. And probably going to get a couple of messages from Lions supporters after this one. I got a couple after the last game against the Stormers. One in particular told me how great they are. They're back on track. So I hope they're right. That's going to be a very interesting game either way. Some interesting Six Nations games. I think probably the one is probably Scotland England is probably the most interesting one this weekend.
Always spicy. Scotland have performed well against England the last while. I mean, they had that win at Twickenham not so long ago. Three years ago.
Yeah.
So I expect that to be a very close one. I will say, though, having looked at both teams so far in this Six Nations, I'd probably favour England slightly.
No, I don't disagree with you there. I think it's going to be interesting. The big challenge for them is to back up that win over France and put in the same sort of performance. If they do, then they certainly are back. But Scotland's won the last two against them, so they'll fancy their chances. And it'll certainly be an interesting one there. The other big news, of course, is France planning to go with a 7-1 bench against Italy.
That's an interesting game to try and deploy the 7-1, unless that's a strategy they want to continue deploying further down the line. You know, obviously the box has made this thing a more palatable thing, the way they've used it over the last while. They've basically turned things around the way you sort of normally configure a bench. They've just turned things upside down, and they've caught a lot of flack for it, but they've been successful. I mean, if you look at the times they have deployed the 7-1 bench, they've largely come out on the right side of the scoreboard. So France obviously have some powerful forwards, and you know, you may figure that, geez, how do we fit all of these guys into 80 minutes? Let's get the bulk of them on.
I just find it funny, and channeling my inner Matt Williams, Liam, I'm saying it's against the spirit of the game. funny how it was such a big thing when the box did it, but now it's almost quiet. Eh?
Well, this thing has been pulled out, has been torn out of it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah. Well, I mean, it would be interesting to see how they do, if they deploy it in the same way and if it works. But certainly France do have the forwards to do that. So, I just find it rather ironic that, yeah, after the way that the reaction was across the world, that other teams who were criticizing it also are starting to do it. So.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Agreed.
Waiting for you to come in and try and argue with me, Liam, but obviously not.
It's as far as I'm concerned, that ship has sailed. It's like, I won't say the box have popularized it, because not enough teams have done it. I mean, some teams have tried it here and there, you know. Well, often
Scotland
even
doesn't have enough words.
But the 7-1 is still a bit of an extreme. I think so much was said and written about it at the time that by now people are almost tired of that debate. And let's see how France use it, really, you know, whether they go with a let's get all of them on at once for that, almost like that special effect. There's a picture moment when seven hulking men run onto the field at the same time. So let's see if they do that.
And then just the last one, and I'm not even going to ask you for a result here, but Wales, Ireland, I see the bookies have given Ireland a 35-point start. Do you think that's a good bet, or do you think Wales are going to surprise us all?
I think Wales may actually beat that spread. I mean, that's very generous.
You don't often see that at the international rugby.
Yeah, that's extremely generous. It's still a case of Ireland to win comfortably, but maybe not by that margin or beating that margin.
That's a big week. And I think next week it's going to be even bigger. They've got the Lions, Sharks, and the Bulls, Stormers, and lots to talk about there. But for this weekend, we hope everybody enjoys the JXK Derby, if we can still call it that. I don't know if we can still call it that.
The Gauteng Stormers. Oh, yes, there is, actually. Sorry, let me take that back.
Yeah. I never knew where the JXK River really was. I think I'm glad to see your heads above water there, especially given Joburg's water problem. So I'm glad you have lots of water around you at least.
Could have a separate podcast series, you know. But anyway, we won't go there.
Yeah, we'll stick to rugby because that's what, whenever you talk about something else on social media, you inevitably get somebody saying, stick to rugby, stay in your lane. Anyway, but saying that, that's it for us this week. We'll chat to you next week. Thanks for listening. And yeah. Let's hope it's a great game on Saturday.
Have a good one. Cheers.
Thanks for listening. For the latest insights and rugby analysis each week, plus new episode alerts, please follow or subscribe to the series. Or find all episodes at jacarandafm.com or the Jackpot app.
That is world class!